This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Today on Dreamland, we have a great guest. Danny Sheehan is going to be back with us. Danny and I have been friends for a long time, and whenever something incredible happens, he gets incredibly busy, and then eventually we get together and have a brief conversation. And that's what's going to happen today, because Danny's background, of course, is profoundly connected to the Catholic Church and to the Jesuit order, and we have a new pope. Not only do we have a new pope, he's called Leo. He's chosen the name Leo, and that has a great deal to do with why Danny and I are going to be talking today. Welcome to the show, Danny. Welcome back, I should say.
Terrific. Thanks, Whitley.
Well, great. All right. Years ago, I had a conversation with someone who was spending a lot of time in the Vatican archives, who had permission to do so. And interestingly enough, they had were in a situation where they also required an American security clearance to enter the area of the Vatican archives that they were doing their research in. I do not know what the research was. I wish I did. I asked, certainly. But the individual let slip the fact that this was necessary. Why do you think that was the case? That's how I want to start.
Well, I know that, for example, the Vatican, right at the end of World War II, that had been given access to a craft that had crashed in Italy in 1933, and the Mussolini government had acquired possession of this craft, and they were attempting to communicate with Germany the possession of this technology. But at the end of the war, the Vatican took steps to Pius XII to turn over the wreckage from this craft to the United States government. And so that there's clearly an interface there that occurred in 1945 at the end of the war between the Vatican and the United States pertaining to this particular craft. I dare say that there's the alliance that existed between the Vatican and the United States government had to do with the anti-communist kind of focus of Pius XII, that he had an adamant opposition to the Soviet Union because of their announced anti-Catholic and anti-theological position. It was an excessive position that had been taken by some of the Marxists in the socialist movement around the world, a sort of a contempt for theological thinking, excessive on the part of the Soviet Union. So the bottom line is that Pius XII was sharing certain kind of information with the United States government that probably would be perceived as inappropriate. And so therefore you can see that whatever records that were being kept of this information in the Vatican archives, which they're very thorough about keeping notes on what's going on with regard to various nation states, that they may well have set up a special requirement for people being given access to the archives to have security clearances with the United States government. This entire development of these security clearances and classified information, et cetera, that began at the end of World War II, originally started with regard to the nuclear secrets, the nuclear weapons secrets, that the United States was so convinced that it had an absolutely unique weapon system here that they wanted to protect the secrets, especially from being obtained by the Soviet Union. And so they set up an entire classification system of basically an Official Secrets Act. And they were very intense about this at the time, and so that I'm sure that they tried to cover through national security restrictions any knowledge about whatever communication they had going with the Vatican in with regard to anti-communism. And coordinating any kind of activities together. And so that anybody who's going to be getting general access to the Vatican archives, the United States government has probably insisted that they be restricted from being able to get at any of the information that related to the interactions between the United States national security people and the Vatican security people. That's something that that they probably would have certainly done.
This particular individual would have had reason to explore historical records regarding UFOs more than any religious texts. And, you know, I have thought that a lot of the older documents especially probably have been offloaded to private industry. Specifically, I have thought, and this is just a guess, that they might have been offloaded to EG&G Rotron and ended up in the Iron Mountain facility in Woodstock, New York. The reason I think that is that there was a period of time in the late 80s, actually after Communion was published, when local residents were annoyed night after night by hundreds of trucks, military trucks, coming in loaded with something and going to the facility, to the entrance of the Iron Mountain facility. And I thought it might be those files. Now, could it be that files have also have been offloaded to the Vatican? And that would be why such a person would be there.
Well, I try to refrain from speculating about these things. When I was a Jesuit,
I do the speculating.
Yeah, when I was at Jesuit headquarters from basically 1975 to 1985, it was during the generalship of Pedro Arrupe. He was the superior general of the Jesuit order at that time, and he was a medical doctor, a surgeon, who had become a Jesuit priest in Spain, and he was a rather ardent opponent to Franco at that time, and he started preaching against Franco and the fascists in Spain, and also against Mussolini and Hitler, and he eventually ended up becoming the superior general of the Jesuit order. So there was a very pronounced anti-fascist meme, I guess you could call it, in the Jesuit order under Pedro Arrupe. He became the superior general of the Jesuits in 1962. And during that whole period where, for example, this is complicated, but John F. Kennedy, after the Cuban Missile Crisis in October of 1962, he and Khrushchev were so freaked out about the fact that they had come so close to having a complete thermonuclear war during the Cuban Missile Crisis that Khrushchev and Kennedy started exchanging a series of 18 private letters back and forth outside of the channels of authorized communication, I guess you could call it, that was monitored by the Central Intelligence Agency in the State Department. They had this backdoor channel going on of communications. And during that time, Khrushchev and Kennedy both agreed that they would each use their respective executive authority to undertake steps to disassemble the nuclear warheads of both arsenals. And destroy them. And that communication was going on back and forth between the two of them. And they resolved that in order to broker this agreement to make sure that both sides followed through with the dismantling and destruction of their thermonuclear warheads, they were going to have John the 23rd be the person who would broker this. to make sure that this was done, because Khrushchev respected Pope John XXIII, and of course so did Kennedy. And so there would be a series of communications that would be going on between the Vatican under John XXIII and both Khrushchev and Kennedy with regard to this extraordinarily sensitive issue of the disassembly and destruction of their respective nuclear arsenals. And I'm sure that would be very classified, because very importantly, that's what actually helped trigger the assassination of the president. That when John Kennedy on June 5th of 1963 demanded that he have access to the UFO information that we had available, he wanted to replace the extraordinarily expensive programs of major nuclear weapons development in the United States and in Russia to substitute for the economic stimulation that was providing. They wanted to have a joint space program. Kennedy and Khrushchev were entering into this agreement to have a joint U.S. and Soviet space program to replace the Cold War. At that point in time, Kennedy determined that it would be important as a show of good faith for him to secure the information about UFOs that we had since 1947 at Roswell and share it with Khrushchev. And as soon as Kennedy contacted John McCone, who was the head of the CIA at the time, and demanded that, information leaked through to Alan Dulles, who was the former CIA director at the time, that this was going on. He learned about this exchange of letters. And that's what actually triggered the assassination of the president, because they didn't think that they had time to wait until a whole year for the 1964 presidential election. And so Dulles took the step as the legal counsel for Brown Brothers Harriman, to greenlight the assassination team that had been put together under Dulles and Richard Nixon back in 1960 to assassinate President Fidel Castro of Cuba, to greenlight that team to assassinate the president, to stop that from happening. And all of that information is knowledgeable in the Vatican archives.
I see. That would be why it didn't appear when they find it.
Clearly, that information is extraordinarily sensitive. Anybody getting near the archives to have kind of general rummaging ability in the area of UFOs would run into that. And anybody who is going to be asking to see information about the UFO issue in the Vatican archives would be almost certainly required to have some kind of a security clearance from the United States in order to see that information. That would be my best estimate of what they're looking for now.
My family was very involved in the Johnson years, of course, with the whole thing because of the fact that one of my relatives was not a Strieber relative, another last name, had been in deep in Texas politics and was actually a big part of the team that was taking Kennedy through Texas. Mm-hmm. And I was terribly disturbed by the fact that my father called me. He called me a few days before the assassination. I had no idea that would happen, of course, and said to leave school. I was in school in Maryland and go spend time with my aunt and uncle who were lobbyists in Washington. They'd been in the Eisenhower administration. And I didn't go because I had classes. And the next thing I knew, Kennedy had been assassinated. It terrified me because it looked like my dad had known in advance that it would happen. I didn't go home for Thanksgiving because I was too upset. Then later I went home for Christmas and he explained that no, he didn't know, that what he did know was what one of his in-laws had told him, that Kennedy was going to go through Dallas in an open car, and they had recommended a closed car, and they felt he was in danger because General Walker had threatened his life. And he was in danger, not from General Walker, obviously, but he was in danger, all right. And, you know, you make a good point. We have not discovered the truth about that assassination yet. And let's do this sometime. We will sit down on Dreamland and we can compare notes, because I've got a lot of stuff about that too.
Terrific.
Now, but let's go back to the Pope. He decides to call himself Pope Leo. Pope Leo, the previous Pope Leo the 13th, was this most important reformer in Catholicism in probably 1,000 years, and or more actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old church. I forget how old it actually is. In any case,
2025.
Right, well, it's the most important reform since they banned female clergy. Let's put it that way. And that was in the 7th century. I don't remember when, but it was way, way back. Mm-hmm. Now, he also founded the Vatican Observatory.
Yes, he did.
Leo did. Now, does this have any significance? I know when I was invited to the Vatican by Monsignor Rito Balducci, he told me that Pope John Paul was quite interested in the UFO issue. And I wonder if we could say, what do you think about Leo?
Well, it's clear that Leo the 14th is going to be interested in following up on the traditions of Leo the 13th. And Leo the 13th, in addition to founding the Papal Observatory, was the one who issued this whole, he is known as the father of the social teachings of the church. The entire speaking out on behalf of labor unions, of the right of people to have a safe working place. He was the Pope from 1878 to 1903. And that was an extraordinarily important period of the rise of the robber barons, the age of American imperialism. It was an age in which the United States was engaged in the major industrial revolution, and that the Pope at that time, Leo the 13th, wanted to speak out on behalf of working people and protecting people against the kind of excesses of unrestricted capitalism, and that became a major dominant theme of the social teachings of the church, that economic justice was a critical pillar in any kind of faith tradition that the Catholic Church was going to be engaged in. And that became an element of the Jesuit order. The Jesuit order was very much devoted under Pedro Arrupe, the father, the superior general, in social justice. And so that you'll notice that in his very first public announcement, Leo the 14th, three different times cited Francis and how he was intending to carry on the traditions of Pope Francis. And Pope Francis was the first Jesuit ever to be Pope. And it was a major reformer in the style of Leo the 13th. And so that this tradition inside the Catholic Church is a very important one. And Leo is now signaling that he's going to be carrying forward with this. Now, this issue of the UFO phenomenon and the reality that our human family here on this planet is in the midst of a galactic civilization of non-human beings, sentient, intelligent, highly technologically developed beings, is the most single most important, most revolutionary insight that carries with it the implications of major social transformation taking place on our planet, and the need to have this done in a way that protects the integrity of individual human beings, that protects human rights, that protects the right to life of human beings. this is going to be an extraordinarily important issue in the transition that's going to take place in the process of disclosure. So I believe that that Leo the 14th is going to be an extraordinarily important person here on our planet to make certain that the transition that we're going to be going through in light of the public acknowledgement of the existence of an extraterrestrial civilization and having to recalibrate our place as a human species in the hierarchy of beings is going to be a very major role from a theological point of view.
Yes.
In kind of restructuring and reformulating the understanding of our human species in the cosmic order. And that is going to be a very important role, not only of the Catholic Church, but of the other major religious traditions. So this is going to be a major priority. And we at the New Paradigm Institute are going to be focusing some serious attention on this whole issue of the theological implications of the revelations that are in the process of taking place right now. As you and I both know, that there's a process underway here in Washington, D.C. now with the coming forth of a lot of inside people inside the UFO program that are now conveying information directly to the Senate Intelligence Committee and to the House Oversight Committee. And the Congress now is being basically shamed into having to come to acknowledge that for the last 80 years, they've been significantly deficient in exercising their oversight authority over the executive branch. There's been allowed to kind of keep secret this most extraordinary of all pieces of information of the knowledge that our planet is being visited by extraterrestrial beings from different star systems in our galaxy. This is an extraordinarily important issue. And it's taking place right now that you and I have been involved in this activity for, you know, almost 50 years, I think.
That's too long.
And so that we now both recognize, that we've become sort of senior statespersons.
Right.
Observing this whole process. And we know that in the next handful of years, that there's going to be a positive, constructive resolution of this issue of sharing this information in some kind of disciplined and coordinated way with the people of the world. And we're going to have to concurrently undertake certain fairly dramatic amendments in our geopolitical structures, our economic structures, our energy systems on our planet, the technologies that are going to be available from this extraterrestrial civilization, and the maintaining of a stable theological, metaphysical perspective on the relationship between human consciousness and the material world is going to be an extraordinarily important balance that has to be struck and maintained here. And I think that Leo the 14th is going to play a significant role in helping to convene the leadership of other major religious denominations on our planet, and having this serve as a major solidifying force for our human family and making the changes that have to be made socially and economically and politically.
Well, you know, because of the cover-up, we are essentially living in a dream. And in other words, this is not the real world. It's a little corner of the world. And a lot of it is not, is denied. And we're denied knowledge of that. I see that as a social justice issue of the first order.
Absolutely. There's nothing about it. No, that is a social justice issue of the first magnitude.
Absolutely. The most important of all social justice issues. We have a right to know who we are and where we are and what we are. And that knowledge is available, but it is denied us.
That's right. And unfortunately, it's being denied to us by the very same people who are engaged in massively unjust activities around the world. You know, the sustaining of torture that we've now revealed at Abu Ghraib, the invasion and occupation of the Middle Eastern oil fields, the sustaining of fascist authoritarian governments all through Central and South America. You know, that this national security state group that has asserted its power at the end of World War II and has risen into the ascendancy is in fact a successor to the robber barons. You know, and what we're really experiencing here is the experience of since 1991 and the dissolution of the Soviet Union by Gorbachev. That what we saw was this immediate response on the part of the forces of capital here in Western civilization to attempt to reassert the basic values of the robber baron here. And it's come to a kind of full fruition now in the Trump administration, where you have multi-billionaires surrounding a person who has, you know, palatial estates, you know, at Mar-a-Lago and golf courses all around the country. And they're attempting to extol the virtues of kind of rampant corporate capitalism. And this was the very issue that Leo the 13th was confronting back in that period between 1878 and 1903. And so it's extraordinarily important that we have a person now as the head of the largest single religious denomination in all of Western civilization, now coming forward and laying claim to the same tradition of Leo the 13th, who is going to be coming to grips with this. And the most important of all social injustices is this particular element, the kind of leading business elite, corporate business elite, keeping this secret from the world, because they want to be able to capture the technology and get patents on it, you know, so that they can be, you know, making billions of dollars on the technology. And they're using that as the excuse for why they have to continue to keep it secret. And so that we're getting set to confront this major social justice issue of the concealment of this basic information for 80 years from the world, and the deprivation of our human family of access to the technology that would have prevented this major global climate change crisis that we're going through now, and the potential threat of thermonuclear war hanging over our heads for our entire lifetimes.
You know, it's been hanging over our heads, and it still is, because, I mean, you know, we just had a spat so far. It's no more than that between two nuclear powers, India and Pakistan.
Yes.
And, you know, I am pretty sure that Iran, typical American, it has got nuclear weapons, but no ability to deliver them yet, I don't think. We don't know. But this situation is so unstable. It looks like the world looks like it looked before World War I, and that really worries me, because World War I surprised everyone. No one expected it. They didn't understand the amount of energy in the international situation at the time, and I don't think we fully understand it now either.
So I think this is an extraordinarily unstable and fluid period that we're in right now, and it's the causation is a lot more serious than just Donald Trump, you know, who is a fairly erratic, unpredictable person, but his administration is the fruition of this entire period that's been going on since December of 1991, as I mentioned, when Gorbachev voluntarily dissolved the Soviet Union and signed an executive order releasing all of the Soviet republics from the USSR. And what happened is our United States administration at the time, George H.W. Bush administration in 1991, rather than responding to that kind of overture on the part of the Soviet Union to try to establish a more mutually cooperative and mutually beneficial kind of arrangement, They immediately under Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and Scooter Libby and Doug Fife and the other groups that were in the Defense Department under George Bush Sr., they began immediately to try to figure out how to establish full military dominance over the planet, and said so in a series of 1992 United States Defense Department policy planning guidance documents that we have access to that shows that that's what they were attempting to do. And so that what's happened is that this period between basically 1992 and now is just the coming into full fruition of the response on the part of the major corporate capital elements in our Western culture to try to establish complete dominion over the natural resources of the planet. That's really what's going on right now. And this has led to this clash between the Soviet Union and the proxy war that's going on between the United States and the Soviet Union now in the Ukraine. I think that having a person such as Leo the 14th to coming into ascendancy now in the Catholic Church is an extraordinarily positive development, where we may be able to implement some of the doctrines of the social teachings of all the churches. The Jewish faith has been historically known for its promulgation of concepts of justice, and it's also true of the Buddhist faith and Hindu faith. All of the major faith groups have this articulation of justice as a major predicate for their religious and theological perspectives. I think we have to move forward now to help organize all of the religious denominations of our planet to come forward to speak into this moment, not only of redesigning the geopolitical structures of our planet, but preparing for this next phase of our human species of being citizens of this galactic civilization that we're in. It's likely that from this point forward, as soon as this disclosure is fully made in a responsible way, and we begin to readjust our economic and political and theological structures, that we may well mark time from this moment onward, instead of from 2,000 years ago. The time itself may be measured from the moment of the full disclosure of the existence of this extraterrestrial civilization and the reorganizing of our human structures on our planet to accommodate this. It may mark the beginning of the measure of time in the future.
In 2009, of course, the church made a statement about the probable existence of life off the planet, and I believe it was John Paul, yes, was asked by a child when he was in Ireland whether or not, it was asked directly about aliens and whether or not they would have been redeemed.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And he said that, you know, essentially talks to us a little bit about the church's response to them if they come and have absolutely no idea of what in the world we're getting at when we are religious. And it's such a complex question. The next part of it, we might not get to that today, but let's just talk about that.
The issue, it's important for people to understand that the entire realm of religion and spirituality in our human family, the word religion comes from the Latin religare, which means to relink. The entire mission of the religious institutions is to try to relink our human species that has evolved this intellectual capacity. The intellect, the Latin root of the intellect is intellectus, which is the ability to distinguish the difference between. And when we develop this intellectual capacity of being able to experientially discern ourselves as separate and apart from the rest of the created universe. There was this type of alienation, this kind of existential experience of alienation of each of us individually from the entire rest of the world, the outside world, in this linking of our consciousness to the rest of the universe is the fundamental mission of the religious endeavor of Renagari, of relinking ourselves. And so that the point is that if in fact, as we're virtually certain now, the other beings exist in our galaxy and in our universe, and they're conscious beings, and they have intelligence, that they too must have engaged in a long-term analysis of what the relationship is between their individuated consciousness and the exterior universe. And so that this mind-body or mind-universe relationship between consciousness and the material reality is the very stuff of religious and spiritual endeavors. And so this is what we're getting set to discover here, is that if, in fact, they have been dealing with the same issue of trying to understand and comprehend the direct relationship between consciousness and the manifestation of material reality, then we are related directly to them in this sense, is that there's a common endeavor to understand the relationship of consciousness to the material universe. And they've been engaged in this process for billions of years, longer than we have. And so they may have come to some fairly significant insights into the nature of this inquiry. And so that the response of our religious institutions and that have been developed on our planet over the several thousands of years that our human family has been collectively engaged in this probing question is going to be really confronted here, because they may have a very specific set of understandings of the relationship between consciousness, which they share with us, and the effect that we have on the material manifestation of reality. This is at the core of their understanding of this, what we keep referring to as new physics, that they've clearly been able to discern some kind of deeper insights into the functioning of the material universe, having to do with acceleration, having to do with anti-gravity, having to do with the material manifestation of their craft and the disappearance of their craft. That this is something that is going to be at the heart of the knowledge that they're going to bring to us. And we think, from Jesuit headquarters, when we first began working on this together back in 1977, right after President Carter was elected, and we were contacted to see if we could assist in getting access to the Vatican archives to make them available for President Carter. I've been engaged in this activity since that point in time, originating at Jesuit headquarters. So I believe that we've now come to the moment with the ascendancy into the papacy of Leo the 14th, that we're going to come to grips with this, and we have a resource now. Our human family has a resource with the information that's in the Vatican archives, and the ability of the Pope to convene meetings and gatherings with other religious leaders in the world, that I think that we can hopefully play a significant role in stabilizing our human family to be able to come to grips with the kind of changes that we need to have and to undertake that are consistent with the social norms and ethical teachings of the religious traditions, and help us be able to recognize the extraterrestrial beings as directly related to us, not seeing them as ultimately alien in that sense, but that there's an intimate relationship between us in consciousness, in the experience of consciousness, and the probing into the questions of the relationship between our consciousness and the material universe. That's what's really going on right now. That's why it's such an important moment.
Well, you take my mind back to the early modern period in the late Middle Ages, when things like levitation were a fact in Western in Catholicism, essentially.
Yes.
And by location, Mary of Agreda being an example of that, and all sorts of things that we now consider miracles, and also since the Enlightenment, more or less in the closing of the jail of Cartesian thought around mankind, around the human mind, we dismiss. But, you know, there's a wonderful book out by Carlos N.M. Iyer called They Flew, which it does not advocate for things like levitation, but it shows how the record is so strong that these things actually did happen, that there is some kind of a relationship between the mind and the world that we lost. And it seems to me that E.T., still with that relationship visibly intact to anyone who is around them at all, is challenging us to regain it. And maybe that's what this is, in a sense, this confluence between theology and physics that you touched on is all about. Could you talk a little bit more about the confluence of theology and advanced quantum physics?
Yeah, you know, there's no doubt about that, really, that this whole realm that our human family characterizes as spirituality and theology is really attempting to deal with the mystical science. And that is this extraordinarily subtle realm of reality, the vibrational frequencies that exist out beyond our immediate physiological perception, our conscious perception, at least, you know, of the just like with light waves, the particular frequency of the vibration of light, there's a ultraviolet and infrared. There's on both sides of the limited spectrum of the full range of light vibrations that we can see and consciously experience. The same thing is true with sound. You know, that there's sound frequencies way above what we can immediately consciously hear and way below. And so we have a comparatively narrow band of access to the full panoply of vibrational frequency that make up material reality. In that the realms that are at the very edges of our experience, where we can begin to discern a vibrational frequency, a subtle light energy outside of that which is normally experienced by everybody, is what we characterize as religion. That it's somehow a mysterious field of theology, but the fact of the matter is it's really a function of the extension of science, of the mystical science, the understanding and knowledge of the existence of these higher and lower frequencies of reality. And that I think that what we're going to discover is that the marriage of science and theology is going to be greatly advanced here in this period, where we begin to publicly encounter the extraterrestrial beings and there are billions of years more of scientific research that they've engaged in to explore this realm that we, as a fairly primitive species, have insisted upon characterizing as a separate category of reality. That this whole spiritual thing is completely separate and apart from material reality in the realm of physics. I think that's one of the things, for example, that Leo the 13th actually established, in addition to the Papal Observatory, established a major commission. They refer to it as the Leonese Commission, and began examining the thinking of St. Thomas Aquinas and also the Augustinian of St. Augustine. This whole exploration of physics and metaphysics and what its relationship is to the theology of the Catholic Church. And so that was a very major focus of the attention of Leo the 13th. And I believe that it's likely that Leo the 14th is going to again revisit that very same stuff, not only the observatory, to re-enliven the activity of the observatory outside of Rome at the Castle Gandolfo, but also this exploration of the relationship between physics and metaphysics and theology. So this is going to be an extraordinarily rich period for the advancement of the thinking and knowledge of our human family, not only on the part of the information that may be being delivered to us from an extraterrestrial civilization, but for us to be able to extend the cutting edges of our own research in this area that has already been undertaken over decades. And one of the important areas of this is the capabilities of the human body, the capabilities of the human species that are capable of not only levitation, which is the interference in the kind of normal functioning of gravity, but also precognition and telepathy. These are capacities that are in the transmutation of matter from one form into another. When Jesus in the famous Last Supper, which is re-celebrated every Sunday at Mass and every day at Mass, actually, when he spoke out and said to his disciples, you know, when you come to understand that the stuff of which this bread is made up, that I'm sharing with you, is made up of the same stuff that my body is made up of. Yes. And the stuff of this wine is the same stuff that my blood is made up of. When you understand this level of consciousness of the nature of reality, you will know who I am. And because he was, according to Teilhard de Chardin, the Jesuit paleontologist and theologian, you know, is asserting basically that Jesus was in fact a mutation, a precursor, along with people like Lao Tzu and Confucius and the Buddha and other prophets of the Axial Age, that they were mutations of our human species, announcing to us where we were going. This is the direction in which we are teleologically unfolding in the process of evolution, and that he is the good news. That as long as we don't destroy ourselves through a major thermonuclear war or through the devastation of our planetary ecology with contamination with pollutants and petroleum and carbon into our atmosphere, if we survive our own sinfulness and disconnection from the natural world, we will evolve in the direction of Jesus and the prophets. This is the message, the essential good news of Christianity, is that and of the other major traditions, is that we are naturally evolving in this direction. And if in fact we are wise enough to engage in certain types of practices of refraining from overstimulating our bodies, you know, and spending time each day and evening meditating and getting into a state of unconditioned consciousness, we can actually help accelerate the biological process of our evolving toward the omega point of the eschaton of our human evolution into a state of unified consciousness with the rest of the universe, where we can really understand our true place in the hierarchy of being in the universe. This is the stuff of mystical science. And this is the age that we're getting set to enter into right now, the new axial age of revelation that's underway right now.
And one of the great leaders of this new journey is a guy from Chicago who we could call Pope Bob. I think that's very cool. Thank you, Danny, for being with us and for your remarkable brilliance and career, all you do for the world. You're a remarkable man.
Thank you, Whitley. We'll have a lot of these conversations, I know, in the next years.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.